Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, www.compassionatecooks.com. Just as a reminder, if you are enjoying this podcast or if you've just stumbled upon it, please consider subscribing to it. It's free to subscribe. And the more subscribers we have, the better our chances are of being recognized by iTunes and other places, which means the better our chances are of reaching more people. Also, it's just more convenient for you if you're a subscriber because each new episode automatically downloads onto your listening device. Hi, everybody. I just returned home from Italy and had a magical time. One thing that's so fantastic about Italy is just how regional the cuisine is. Just driving an hour away from one place to another, you can see the differences in the menu choices. If you're interested in reading my suggestions about eating vegan in Italy, you can visit my blog. I think some of the tips will be relevant to other places, but I really did focus on my experiences in the Tuscany and Umbrian regions. Just go to CompassionateCooks.com and under Essays or Writings, click on Blog. Thank you for your emails and your kind words and your stories and your podcast sponsorships. Some of our sponsors choose to remain anonymous. So today, I just want to thank all of you who have contributed to this podcast. I really wouldn't be able to do this work if it weren't for you. I mean that. If you are willing and able, please visit CompassionateCooks.com and click on Support Our Podcast. And thank you for whatever you can do to help. Today's podcast is dedicated to young vegetarians everywhere. Though it will focus mostly on teenage vegetarians, it's also meant for guys and gals in college. I plan on doing a separate podcast, or two or three, for parents of young vegetarians, but before that time comes, before I'm able to do that episode, I recommend to those parents that you visit a website called teenvegetarian.com. There's a special section just for parents, and pick up a copy of Carol Adams' relatively new book called Help, My Child Has Stopped Eating Meat. Even if you're not a teen or college-age vegetarian, I do hope you'll listen to today's episode. Perhaps in some way you're connected to a young vegetarian, and your input may be very valuable to them. Now, I receive email from people all around the world of many different ages, and I just love it. I don't hear from too many young people who say they're vegetarian with supportive parents. I do hear from a couple, but it's not the majority. Nathan is someone who did write to me and say that he'd like to publicly thank his parents for being so selfless and supportive. Though they're not vegetarians, he wrote, they go out of their way to accommodate me and show me wonderful respect for my lifestyle every day. And I'm really so glad for Nathan because having support and understanding is really so very important for all of us, since there is so much in our society that opposes vegetarianism. There's a lot against us in society. So having support is just, it's so vital. It's why I've said that I really encourage people to find like-minded folks around their area so they can just have a support system. Nathan is, I think, in the minority when it comes to parental support, at least in the initial stages, because I think this whole thing is a process. So in the initial stages, parents may seem unsupportive, and I think Nathan's in the minority to have parents who are so initially so supportive. I'd like to share some letters from other young people and use each letter as my jumping off point to talk about the bigger suggestions, bigger points. Perhaps some of you will relate to these letters. Perhaps some of you will realize that as a parent or aunt or uncle or guardian or mentor or friend of teenager, that your support and encouragement can really make all the difference to them. The first letter is from Alex, a 21-year-old college student. I thought his insight was particularly keen. He wrote, "I'm 21. And I have been vegetarian for a little over a year, and I can say that this has been one of the greatest things I have ever done. But it is something that my parents rarely talk about. The ironic part is that around the same time that I became vegetarian, my parents discovered that my 16-year-old brother had started smoking. While this was met with great disappointment, it was easily accepted because my father smokes. Despite the fact that he's underage, having the cigarettes bought for him or buying them illegally, and is headed down a long road of respiratory diseases, cancer, and all the other horrible things that smoking causes, it was easily accepted. I never imagined that choosing to show compassion towards animals would be met with such hostility, while making such a destructive choice toward your future would be met with such acceptance. However, listening to your podcast really boosts my spirit and reaffirms that I am, we are, doing the right thing for the animals. We are indeed, Alex. And I think your observation about your parents' reaction to your brother smoking versus your veganism is so insightful. It really is remarkable that self-destructive or other destructive activities are perfectly acceptable, and living a life of wakefulness and thoughtfulness and consciousness is met with fear and hostility. But I think Alex put his finger on one of the reasons for this. You know, we often talk about sheep in a deprecating way, in that they're herd animals, referring to how they follow one another and do what all the other sheep do. When people are conformist, we say they're acting like a flock of sheep, kind of in a negative way. Now, it's not that sheep aren't herd animals, but in my very humble opinion, I think humans are very much herd animals too. I've seen many more conformists in my day than I've seen people willing to exert their individuality. And that's not to say that there aren't people who do exert their individuality, but I think very often when they attempt to, they get run out of the herd or threatened to get run out of the herd. And this is most apparent when we're teenagers. This time in our lives is signified by our fleeing the nest, our finding our voice, testing the waters of independence. When I think back on high school or even middle school, I don't have a memory of the other students looking too kindly upon nonconformists, the kid who dressed differently or who listened to music outside of that, which was popular. In fact, these different kids, quote unquote, were often downright shunned by the majority. They were run out of the herd. So what happens when we get a little older? Now, the dichotomy between conformist and nonconformist may not be as apparent as when we're in high school and in that kind of concentrated social arena. But even after we leave our teen years behind, there is still the expectation to conform, to wear the right clothes, to have the right job, to look like everybody else, to think like everybody else, to watch the same films or TV shows as everybody else, and to eat like everybody else. One might say that this expectation forces us to act like a flock of humans. Someone who doesn't do all of these things is maybe not shunned in the same way they are in high school, as much as they might be called arrogant or self-righteous, all because they don't conform. We even have a name for this type of person. Furthering our metaphor, we call them the black sheep. I'm proud to say, am the black sheep in my family, and I was the black sheep when I was growing up. I was the black sheep in high school for sure. Now, my experience tells me this, that many people want to be different. They want to look different. They want to eat differently. They want to be themselves, but they're afraid. They're afraid of being shunned by the flock. So especially when it comes to how they eat, many people compromise their own values, make excuses, or just justify their eating habits because they don't want to appear different. They don't want to be looked at as different. They say they don't want to be a pain, they don't want to be too much trouble, but I think they're really afraid of standing out from the crowd. The consumption of animal flesh and secretions in our society is so ingrained, so sanctioned, that Alex's father more readily accepts a son who smokes than a son who stops eating animals. The fact that Alex's father smokes has a lot to do with his acceptance, I think. And the same can be said of society at large in regards to vegetarianism. The vegetarian stands out as the black sheep and is looked upon with suspicion by the rest of the herd. Yes, there's also the fact that a mirror is being held up, the reflection of which makes people uncomfortable. Yes, there's also the fact that meat, dairy, and eggs are held in such high regard, as well as symbols of affluence. Yes, there's also the fact that Alex's father's life won't be disrupted by the smoker, but he may be disrupted by the vegan, right? Think of family dinners and holidays. But perhaps, just perhaps, there's also some projection of fear on the part of Alex's dad. Perhaps he knows that Alex is making a choice that will make it difficult for him, for Alex, in terms of how society tends to respond to nonconformists. I've heard parents of young children, especially young children of also teenagers, express concern about how their child will look different among the other children on the playground or birthday parties, you know, if they don't have TV, right? Or if they don't know Dora the Explorer or the latest TV program, or if they don't eat the same foods as everybody else. That parent then projects that fear onto his or her child. Again, it's the human herd mentality. I think that one of the aspects of becoming an adult is not just exerting our individuality and expecting everyone to understand. It's also about understanding someone else's perspective. That's what it means to be an adult. So I think it's really important that teen vegetarians really try to put themselves in their parents' shoes so they can try and understand where they're coming from and why they react the way they do. Being an adult literally means shedding that self-centeredness of our childhood. And I don't mean self-centeredness in a judgmental way. I'm referring to it very specifically as a stage in our development when we think the world literally revolves around us. So if we want our parents to understand us, I think we also have to try and understand them. Another letter I received is from Christine, who's a freshman in college. She wrote, "I have been listening to your podcast since December, and it ultimately helped me make the decision to become vegetarian, much to my parents' dismay. I'm learning to become firm in my beliefs and proudly display this part of my life. As you say, speak your truth. That is something that I have been struggling with, but I'm growing stronger every day. I used to be ashamed to tell people that I didn't eat meat and was hesitant to call myself a vegetarian out loud. Now I am becoming better about it, and people initiate dialogue with me and are generally receptive. My parents are not very supportive of my decision, but I plan on trying to convince them over the summer by explaining some of these issues and volunteering to cook dinner often. I will win them over." I think it's really important for new vegetarians to understand, whatever your age, that our parents need a little time to adjust to our new lifestyle. When you first announce that you're vegetarian to them, it's a bit of a blow. And I think it's helpful to recognize that. First of all, they're human too, and they're creatures of habit and have probably been cooking the same thing for you over and over for years, right? They've gone through your picky phases. They've cut the crust off of your bread. They've made your lunch just the way you like it. And now you're telling them that it's all going to change. Now, of course, in an ideal situation, the parent would recognize that their child's decision is independent of them and wouldn't take it personally. But again, parents are human. So let them have the reaction and know that it really doesn't have anything to do with you per se. And we'll talk about some other reasons they have this reaction, but it has nothing to do with you. They're probably freaking out because they have no idea what to feed you. If they've been making your favorite meals for years, they're not exactly going to be enthusiastic about changing the repertoire that's so familiar to them. Another aspect of the reaction goes a little deeper, and I think I've talked about this on a previous episode. I think that one of the reasons parents take it so personally is because food is used from the day we're born as a way for them to express their love for us. They've used it from day one as a way to nurture us and be close to us. When we reject the food they've chosen to feed us, it's almost like we're rejecting them, like we're rejecting their love. Now, I know that may sound a little hokey, but I do think there is an aspect of that here. And then there's just the plain old human ego knee-jerk response that shouts, "What's wrong with the way I raised you?" As if our decision to be vegetarian, vegan, is some kind of judgment of their overall parenting skills. Now, you may know that it's not, but that may be their reaction nonetheless. So how do you remedy something like this? Well, talk to them. Tell them that you understand that this is different and that you appreciate all the years they've spent feeding you and buying your favorite foods. Tell them that you need their support and that you're willing to help make it easier. Christine is a perfect example of this. She said she was really excited to go home and talk to her parents about the issues and to cook for them, to show off lots of yummy dishes. And I think that's brilliant. In fact, I think it's essential. Let's face it, it really wouldn't be fair to just expect mom or dad or whoever does the cooking to change instantly. I think teens need to take some responsibility in their decision and help cook. One of my regular cooking class students is a teenager named Emily, who's vegetarian. Actually, she's vegan now, and she comes to every one of my classes. She cooks a lot for the family. She really loves to cook. And wouldn't you know it, her parents are actually eating healthier than ever and really loving it. I've seen this happen all too frequently. When people are afraid of something new, so one of the reasons that parents might have this reaction is that it's something new, you know, their son or daughter becoming vegetarian, what they're often most afraid of, and this is true, I think, in many examples, not just about food or vegetarianism, is that they're afraid of the unknown. But once the dust settles and everyone starts enjoying some new meals, I've never seen it fail. Everyone gets really excited about it, tries things they've never tried before, and winds up eating healthier than ever before. I've even seen some parents become vegetarian as a result. Now, be careful. Don't let that be your expectation or your goal. But I'm just saying, I've seen it happen. Now, I've talked a few times as if everything will just be topsy-turvy. And there will be a period of adjustment, both emotionally and practically, and some new dishes and ingredients will have to be added to the repertoire. I think one of the most helpful things to do is sit down and write down, along with your parents, the dishes you all eat on a regular basis so that your family recognizes that there will still be the familiar. I think you'll find that more than half, maybe about half, of the dishes that are rotated regularly either are already vegetarian or even vegan, or super easy to just make vegetarian or vegan. Here are some examples. Perhaps one night in your family home is pizza night, either as a takeout or dining out or making at home. It's super easy to ask your parents for one pie or a half a pie to contain just sauce and a variety of vegetables and herbs. Being in Italy, it's one of the staples. It wasn't a problem at all to order a pizza without cheese. It's just one of the pizzas. It's called a marinara pizza. So you get pizza with a wonderful sauce and some oregano, and that's really it. And it's fantastic. But you can add some vegetables and pine nuts as well. Also, if you have a regular pizza place that you like, you can always bring them non-dairy cheese. A lot of places will just make the pie for you with your cheese. Now, obviously, the same is true if you're making pizzas at home. Just use a different cheese for your pizza. Everyone still gets to have their pizza night tradition with only a slight modification. Pasta, again, just being in Italy, here's another example of just millions of pasta dishes that are, you know, who are already vegan or can just be easily veganized if your family doesn't already eat a vegetarian version. If meat sauce is the norm, you can ask if either the whole thing can be made with just marinara sauce or if some pasta can be kept aside for you. And then you'll just heat up your own sauce in a separate pot. I mean, it's not that inconvenient. You can also experiment with different vegetarian meat crumbles or seitan, or as I've talked about in a former episode, freeze tofu, thaw it out, squeeze out the water, and then crumble that into the family's usual pasta sauce. There are also vegetarian meatballs. These are really good transition foods for the whole family. And though I'm not saying that you have to be sneaky, but when these veggie meats are added without anybody's knowledge, nobody ever knows the difference, period. Okay, so I'm just saying. Perhaps you get chicken salad or tuna salad for lunch. Perhaps your mom makes you that. Just switching out two ingredients will make it vegan. Using eggless mayonnaise instead of the conventional saturated fat-laden stuff, and using mashed chickpeas instead of tuna, or steamed and crumbled tempeh instead of chicken. Okay, just switching out just a couple things. Perhaps burritos are a regular part of your family's routine. All you need to do is request beans instead of meat. Or for tacos, you can use extra firm tofu instead of ground beef or ground turkeys. You can still use those packets of taco flavorings that are sold near the taco shells. One brand I like is Burritos, B-E-A-R, like bear, I-T-O-S, Burritos. But find one that you like and just follow the instructions on the packet, using tofu, crumbling the tofu a bit, browning it in a saute pan, and then adding the packet along with some water, and you know, voila, it's the same thing. Everyone can add their own toppings and everybody is happy and satisfied. If burgers are a regular thing, there are a huge variety of store-bought veggie burgers to choose from, or you can make your own. Or make falafel, a fast, a delicious, healthful patty made from chickpeas, a staple in Middle Eastern cuisine. Of course, you can have French fries like everybody else. And again, everything remains familiar. Stuff the falafel in a pita with tomatoes, cucumbers, and everybody's sharing a dinner together. Then there are, of course, the things that your parents probably already make for you that are just already vegan, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And try almond butter instead of peanut butter. And please get natural nut butters. I've talked about this before. Don't get nut butters with sugar and crap. Roasted vegetables, soups. I mean, there are a variety of soups that are, you know, bean soups or vegetable soups, pasta salads, rice and beans, vegetable fajitas, all these wonderful things that are just really quick and easy to make that, again, are very close to the family's original dishes. Then there are some things that you can make that are vegan. You know, maybe it's pasta salad with raw vegetables and pine nuts and balsamic vinegar, or leafy green salads with beans and raw veggies and nuts and a delicious vinaigrette. Bean salad with seasoned rice vinegar, lemon juice, and fresh herbs. Just really simple things that you can make together. Also, there's a really great cookbook I want to recommend. You can order it from my store if you go on compassionatecooks.com and click on Stock Your Pantry. It's called The Teens Vegetarian Cookbook, and it's by Judy Krismanik. Though there are some recommendations and recipes for non-vegan dishes, it's really primarily vegan. It's a great book with a slew of easy recipes and tips, and I highly, highly recommend it. And of course, in making all these things, nobody can complain that you're not getting your protein. It's an abundance in everything I just named. So when you sit down and look at all the things that your family already makes that's vegetarian, and then all the things that can easily be made vegetarian, at that point, you can create some kind of plan regarding how you'll help. Okay. One of the other things that happens, which is why I recommend this exercise for everybody listening, not just teenagers doing it with their parents, is that you realize how much you're eating of this or how much you're really not eating enough of that, which is usually vegetables, or how your repertoire lacks variety, etc. Maybe parents will also find this exercise helpful because they may see that they're serving way too much, you know, unhealthy foods to their family, like saturated fat and cholesterol, probably more than they want to or intended to, or even were aware of. I recently received a very sweet email from a girl named Corey. Here's what she had to say. I am a 15-year-old vegan girl. I would not consider myself 100% vegan because I live with a family of omnivores who do not support me in my veganism. Being that I have no car or money, there is no way for me to buy my own groceries. As soon as I leave home, I plan to live a completely cruelty-free lifestyle. I am a longtime listener, and you don't know how much I appreciate your podcast. I live in an area where veganism is a fanatical thing and is unheard of. I have yet to find another vegan and only one vegetarian. I get teased and put down for my beliefs, but I always have hope when I snuggle up with my dog and listen to your podcast, knowing that there are other vegans out there, even if some days it feels like I'm the only one. The image of Corey snuggled up with her dog finding refuge in this podcast is just so meaningful to me. You are not alone, Corey. You are absolutely not alone. In fact, just as an aside, I just added what's called a Frapper map to my MySpace page, and I will put this on my website soon too, that enables people to pinpoint on a map where they are in the world. You can register and actually communicate with one another, I think. But I thought this would be a good place to start to help connecting people. So go to MySpace, search for Compassionate Cook, and you'll see the map on the first page there. So I'm going to try to find ways to really connect all of you, because I know a lot of you feel that you're alone, and you know, you might have a neighbor you don't know that's vegan. so let's connect with each other. Anyway, this is something I've seen happen a lot. Parents who say they won't support their teenagers' changes, especially when it comes to buying vegan versions of refrigerator staples. So the teen often has to buy those things themselves, or they can't buy those things themselves because they're too young and they don't have a job, etc. I know this is a tough one because there is a cost difference between things like cow's milk and non-dairy milks, which, you know, often cost more. And again, I think really talking to your parents or your guardians and working out some kind of bargain, like you'll do extra chores or something to make up for the cost of the non-dairy versions of things. Or explaining to your parents that non-dairy milk is more expensive because they don't benefit from the government subsidies that cow's milk does. I mean, the fact that schools don't have anything but cow's milk as part of the school lunch program should be a red flag for everybody. And in those districts that do provide something like soy milk, those children have to get a note from the doctor saying that they're medically required due to something like lactose intolerance in order to get the non-dairy milk. I mean, I think if the teen and the parents can be careful not to perceive the vegetarianism as me against you, but together learn about the politics and read about the abuses and learn about the health benefits of vegetarianism and the health detriments of a standard American diet, that will be a much better place to start from. And I think I talked about this in an episode about conversational methods or argument methods, you know, where it's not you against me, but it's us against the issue. So try to do that with your parents. Try to kind of team up with them and look at these issues together. And I don't mean to sound like Pollyanna. I wasn't a teenager and living with my mother when I became vegetarian, but I didn't get a warm response to my diet change, even though I was 20, I think I was, you know, 19 or 20. So I'm not saying that it's always easy or that it's always going to work, but at least trying, at least communicating is the best place to start. It's the best we have. Here's a letter from a 14-year-old vegan named Peggy. I'll get right to the point. Thank you for changing my life. I've only been listening to your podcast for about 3 weeks, but since then I've gone from wanting to be vegan, but too scared to confront my dad, to proud, confident vegan, prepared to supply anyone information about veganism, nutrition, and animal cruelty. You've opened my eyes to animal cruelty. I had no idea that the animal slaughter industry was so barbaric. My initial reason to convert to veganism was for the nutritional benefits, but now it's also for the animals as well as for the environment. My parents were at first very much opposed, but once I presented the right information, I think they're quite all right with it. This is along the lines of what I just mentioned. I said before that the teenager needs to take some responsibility, not only for the food and the cooking aspect, but also for finding the right information to offer their parents, getting books like Becoming Vegan or Help My Child Has Stopped Eating Meat and the Teen's Vegetarian Cookbook. Download and print such documents as the American Dietetic Association's position paper on vegetarianism. Go to www.pcrm.org and get answers to specific questions your parents might have. There is a ton of information out there supporting a vegetarian diet. So do the research and help alleviate your parents' fears, because one of their concerns is just fear that you're not going to be getting the right nutrition. Now, their fears will prove to be unfounded, but you have to become educated together and also not become a junk food vegetarian. You should know by now that I'm not talking about eating potato chips and cheesy pizza every day. You need to eat a variety of foods in your diet. You need to eat vegetables, try new vegetables. You want your parents to be confident in your decision, and you can help matters by choosing healthier foods. I'm not saying you have to be perfect, but make healthful choices as best you can. A few months ago, I received a letter from Jessica, and I promised I would respond, but Jessica, I really wanted to respond via the podcast, so I do apologize for my delay, but here's what I have to say, and I hope it's helpful. She wrote, "Recently, I was listening to your podcast before going on a social outing with my parents and siblings. We were looking for a place to eat, and I recommended going to a veg-friendly place in our area. At this place, everyone could eat comfortably, and the restaurant also served chickens for semi-vegetarians. My parents refused to go because they, quote, wouldn't be able to eat there. Of course, this wasn't true, but I lost the battle. We ended up at a Hog Wild Bar and Grill with one salad on the menu that was meatless, and it was so gross. I know that you said that recommending restaurants was a good idea, but what should I do when the people I'm with completely refuse to try something out of the ordinary? What should I do next time I'm in a situation like this?" First of all, let me just say that I'm so sorry this was your experience. I'm so proud of you for speaking up and asking for what you want. My advice is to not stop. Keep asking. First of all, talk with your parents and tell them that you feel very seriously about this and that you need their support. I think sometimes parents also write this off as a phase. There may be other things you started and got really excited about but then dropped out of. So I think they don't take it seriously and look at it as a fad. So I think it's important to show them that you're serious. Be consistent. I've seen a lot of parents have a change of heart when they realize it's not just a temporary fad that you're going through, but something you feel strongly about. Again, and I don't mean to make it sound so like it's so easy. I do remember what it was like to be a teenager and feel unsupported by my parents. But I think it's really important that you tell them how it made you feel to be disregarded. Tell them that you want to enjoy family dinners as well, but you'd like to have more than a gross salad to eat. I think one way to prevent this from happening again is to be prepared. Don't wait for the night that you're all going out to dinner to make a suggestion that may be rejected. This can begin to create anger and resentment between you and your family members, and that's not good. It can also begin to make you feel like you have no voice, no power, and you do. But I think a good approach would be to talk to your parents in advance about what you can do to help accommodate everybody when you know that you're going out to eat. Perhaps you can list some restaurants together that you all know and like, so that when you're going out to eat at the spur of the moment, you can look at that list and make a decision so that everybody will be satisfied. But I think being prepared is really essential. Don't just wait for that night just before you're going, okay? And don't stop asking for what you need and for what you want, and don't stop standing up for what you believe in. I know there's so much more to say, and we will do more episodes on this topic. I heard from a number of teenage vegetarians. I think I had mentioned it in some episodes several months ago that I would be doing an episode on teenage vegetarianism, and a bunch of people wrote to me and said, I can't wait for that episode. So I hope this didn't disappoint you. I hope there's been some helpful information for everybody listening, not just our amazing teenagers who are staying true to their own values despite resistance and criticism. You are not alone. You have my utmost respect and my support. The right way is not always the easy way. It's up to each and every one of us to decide how we want to live. We can be complacent and fearful and static, or we can be dynamic and courageous and powerful. It's up to us. There's a quote by Jack London that I have on my wall right near my desk, and I want to share it with you. Jack London, by the way, was an outspoken advocate for animals. Because of him and the activists who took his suggestions, did you know that Barnum and Bailey, Ringling Barnum and Bailey Circus, stopped using animals in their circus for 5 years? It's amazing. Read the book I've recommended before, For the Prevention of Cruelty, by Diane Beers. It's in my store for more about this. It's just amazing. Anyway, here is the quote by Jack London. I would rather be ashes than dust. I would rather that my spark should burn out in a brilliant blaze than it should be stifled by dry rot. I would rather be a superb meteor, every atom of me in magnificent glow, than a sleepy and permanent planet. The proper function of man is to live, not to exist. I shall not waste my days. I shall use my time. This is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.